I was having a very busy week last week and many things went wrong. But they always tend to do. Just because you're a monk, it doesn't mean that things go right. So little things like our monastery car just has been to the fixers up to the garage about two or three times and now has to go back again. It's a black hole for the money which you donate, it seems. They always seem to be going wrong. And the people over in Bangkok, I'm going to Thailand this evening for the United Nations Waisak ceremonies. They're messing around with everything, so I had to redo the whole tickets. And I just remember a few days earlier that I was busy working in the retreat center, just still doing some plumbing, getting myself nice and dirty. They're like boys being boys. You know, I'm still a boy underneath, messing around with the plumbing and the dirt. And going back to the monastery and finding there was no water in the shower. So these are just things which happen in life. And so just a couple of days ago, on the vehicle which we're using, which somebody donated to us, an old Magna car, no one had washed the windscreen, so I used my finger to write on there that samsara sucks. Samsara is a Buddhist... Samsara is a Buddhist word for sort of life. We were using that car to come in this afternoon, and on the freeway we were behind a taxi. And on the taxi there was an advert on the back, and all the monks saw it, burst out laughing, because on the advert it was, if you hear anyone say that life sucks, send them to... And I'd just been saying that life sucks, but you didn't actually see where you're supposed to send them to. And I must be the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, I reckon. So if you hear anyone say life sucks, send them here, because we understand this. So that's sometimes what happens in life, isn't it? That things go wrong. So the talk this evening is what to do when things go wrong in life. You know, I'm not sure about you, but when I was young, I tried to fix up life. I worked really hard trying to fix things up, but it didn't make much difference. Actually, it usually made things much worse. And sometimes that you try to fix up life and trying to make things better. It's worthwhile doing, trying to fix up the world, but I don't know, the world goes its own directions in spite of me, and it's sort of, sometimes you wonder, you know, what's happening. And in life, we go around our life and our years, and things go right and things go wrong. Now, after a while, you know, when you get old, you should start to realize that this is the nature of life. And the Buddha actually taught the first noble truth. He called it the truth of suffering, but I call it life sucks. That's the first noble truth. That's what Buddha said. If he was speaking modern language, that's what he would say. It's suffering. But you don't have to be depressed about this, because there is a solution. What he's saying is that life is troublesome. We all get into disappointments, frustrations, things go wrong. And I notice in myself that sometimes you think, why does it go wrong? Why is it that when people put in the vanity units in the toilets of our retreat center, they put the screws right through the water pipes? There's only a narrow water pipe. They've got this whole big wall. And why does it actually go right through the center of the water pipes? And so you can't... And of course, because this is what happens, isn't it? This is life. If ever you've built a house, I'm sure you've had even worse experiences. So after a while, sometimes I get to the point of saying, what do you expect, Ajahn Brahm? And it's a lot of times it's my expectations are the cause of the suffering. And you should learn by now. You talk to all the other people. Now, just before we did our opening ceremony of our retreat center, you know, I told you that we were working there till 2 o'clock in the morning. This monk was working till 2 o'clock in the morning, trying to finish things off. And then people say, "Yeah, that was what it was like when we had our house. Yeah, that's what when we did our project. The builders always take the very last minute to finish things off." So, I mean, what do you expect? Really, I should have expected that from the very beginning. Actually, I was telling people we probably finished at midnight on the night before. I was actually wrong. It wasn't midnight, it was 2 a.m. But A lot of times the suffering in life is when we expect life to be somehow different. And a few years ago, when a person in Singapore asked me, they said, I'm in a bit of a rush. I've got an appointment to go to. Can you please teach me what is life in brief? And when I said that life is suffering, and he said, why? Come on, be quick about this. It's, what is suffering? You know what it's like in modern life. You don't want to, sometimes people don't have time for a whole hour's talk. I mean, this is a luxury to be able to come here and actually listen to a talk. And the only reason probably you can come to a talk on a Friday night is because you've probably been laid off because of the economic crisis. I don't know, whatever. Anyway, or you're just, you know, doing sort of part-time work. But anyhow, most people are very, very busy. And so, I remember just coming out, I love actually being challenged sometimes, because when you're really challenged and you have to sort of teach very quickly, it really, you know, you dig deep and you get these great answers coming out. And the answer was that, look, sir, the suffering is asking from life what it can never give you. I always like that definition. It's asking from life what life will never be able to supply. And that's called suffering. That's why life sucks sometimes. It's not actually what life, because life has always been this way. But what it is our expectations and our requests, what we want out of life. And I want the best retreat center in the whole world. I want all the toilets to work straight away. I want to get a car and have it serviced and never go wrong. Especially just the day after the warranty expires. And of course, it never happens that way, does it? I remember this motorbike I had. The motorbike I had when I was just, you can imagine me in a motorbike. I had long hair in those days and a big motorbike. It was an average sized motorbike. And going around backwards and forwards in my motorbike. And it was only 1 year had the warranty. And I didn't believe it. The very day afterwards, it was going fine until then. And it sort of started developing problems. And of course, I don't know actually how they do this. It must be very clever, these Japanese makers of motorbikes. They actually time it that it's perfect for 1 year, but one day afterwards it breaks down and costs you a lot of money. Well, this poor person, I don't know if he's here this evening, we always sort of go on arms round on a Saturday morning, and he told me just what happened when he got his $900 from the government, from Mr. Rudd. He sort of got it that morning, and he was driving, and his car broke down that afternoon. The clutch had gone, it cost him $880. At least he made $20. And anyway, apparently that's what you're supposed to do with that $900. Put it back in the economy. And he did, straight away. A really good Australian. But these are such simple stories to bring up, because you've got your own stories of what happens in life. And gee, we always expect something else, but it never happens. And so life is always a struggle. And that's what life is all about, a struggle. If it was so easy, it wouldn't be worth living life. There's those struggles, those disappointments which test us. They are our learning experience, what I always call the growing pains. Without pain, there's no real growth in this life. We have to learn from these things. And so after a while, you say you expect things to go wrong. Now you expect to get sacked from work. You expect, you know, your partner to say bye-bye. You expect to get sick. Do you? And it's just, so often all I can do is say, okay, come and get real, guys, girls. You know, you're getting old. You're going to get sick. Things are falling apart. You feel that inside. And, you know, you fall apart so much. And there's so much the doctor can do. And after a while, the doctor can't do anything else for you. And so you have to be taken to the wreckers yard, Karakata, Pinaroo, or Fremantle. That's what it really is, a wreckers yard. So this is our life. So what do you expect? The problem is in life, why do people suffer? When things go wrong, that very word, things go wrong, just the red light should come on. What do you mean things are going wrong? There's nothing wrong with dying. There's nothing wrong with sort of people putting the screws through the water pipes. There's nothing wrong just, you know, with things being late. There's nothing wrong with this thing. There's nothing wrong with me sort of making mistakes or saying stupid jokes. Just who I am. Somebody told me this terrible joke last Saturday. I can't resist telling you it because it's my mood. And anyway, I'm going away this evening so I can actually get out of the country before the repercussions really hit. And it's just, it just reminded me because of that talking about sort of cars and car accidents, and Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse were in a car accident. And Minnie Mouse was very, very severely injured, but Mickey Mouse saved her life. And how did he save her life? Mouse to mouse resuscitation. If you want to go now, I can completely understand. Anyways, so if you see it, what do you expect for a Friday night? You've been coming here for many years, you know my reputation, so it doesn't get any better than this. So no need to suffer for it, because... But anyway, going back to what goes wrong in life, we understand actually how life actually flows. Understanding life, and understanding the world, understanding politics, understanding policemen, understanding other people. When you understand, we actually have realistic expectations of life. You know, on a Friday night, can't we move this place to where there's no dogs? And there isn't any place in this world without dogs. There's always somebody barking. And anyway, if you move this where there's no dogs, if somebody would do their lawn mowing. That's one of the reasons about daylight saving. I'm going to probably, you know, if I had a vote, I'd vote against it. Because sometimes if it's very early when we have the evening talk, you get the people who are just out there mowing their lawns and making a big noise and you can't even hear what you're saying. But anyway, it doesn't matter, whatever you want to vote. When it comes down to it, that these things actually happen. Now, what do you do when things go wrong in life, or so-called go wrong? We think they go wrong. What happens? We get upset. We get angry. We create all this tension inside of us, which is not necessary. Why does a stupid dog make you suffer? It's just a dog being a dog. What do you expect dogs to do? All the dogs I've ever met, they all bark. So what do you expect? All places you go to. Now, they're all noisy. It's amazing. You get so many people here sitting quietly. But they're not all quiet. There's always somebody going to come in early, somebody come in late, somebody going to let off winds, probably just right in front of you. There's always somebody going to disturb you, and that's the nature of things. And look, what we've got now, people are really worried about swine flu. What do you expect? I mean, there's the bugs in the air, in the world, and there are too many people anyway. You know, we need to sort of do a cull. Now, what are you afraid of anyway? You're only going to die, and you're going to die anyway. It's much better to die soon. You don't have to worry about nursing homes and old age and palliative care and all this. It costs a lot of money for the government, so you're doing a wonderful thing for the economy by dying early. Why do people really obsess about these things? There's nothing wrong with this. If you look at history, there's always been these epidemics, whether it's another, what is it, the plague or the Black Death, or the sort of, the influenza in this 1918, or the SARS. But I'm just really sort of surprised at people, just how people overreact to these things. Even today, somebody just rang me from Singapore, and they were just wanting to come to Perth. They wondered, is it safe to fly? Because so many people have got swine flu. And that's what happened to me once when I went to Singapore during the middle of the SARS crisis. And I've been here, done that before. And as I landed in Singapore airport, I actually read the newspaper on the plane. And on the front page, the headlines, and just to make the newspaper sell very well, it's in big, black, bold, 100 people dead. And I think, gee. And it's sort of, when I arrived in Singapore, they had all the, you know, the heat cameras on you. So, and I was thinking, come on, think cool, think cool, think cool. You never know if these things work or not. But anyhow, they're going to be probably there again tomorrow morning when I arrive. But we got these heat cameras, and all my disciples, they were just lined up outside. What should we do? What should we do? What should we do? They'd hired the convention center just for my talk, just me alone. It must have cost a fortune to hire this place. And they said, should we cancel? The Singapore government had requested no public meetings. The schools have been closed. They put so much money into this event. 4 days of talks. And I said, how many people in Singapore? They said about 4 million. That means 3,990,900 people haven't died of SARS. Why is it that when we see how many people have got a sickness, we forget that most people haven't? The chances of you flying and getting swine flu on those days SARS was so small compared to sort of just crossing a road or doing the other things we do in life. Why is it that people just are so afraid of these things that they overreact? So when I said that, everybody laughed, relieved all their tension, and we went ahead with our program, and no one got SARS. No one went to my talk. Checked it out. Because no one actually got SARS after that time we arrived. It was always already finished with, basically. But anyhow, if you are going to protect yourself from sickness, what's the best to do it? Worry about it and stay at home? Look, every doctor knows, and there's a few doctors here, your immune system actually gets improved when you're happy and when you laugh at stupid jokes like that mouse-to-mouse resuscitation jokes. I just improved your immune system. I made you even stronger. And especially when you laugh, you know, many of these things are respiratory problems, and when you laugh, you're exercising your lungs, and actually they get stronger. You're actually doing a very positive thing to stop getting these sicknesses. So coming to a good talk and inspiring yourself and getting uplifted, that actually makes you more protected. So this evening, you're getting your dose of anti-swine flu venom. No, venom, that's the wrong word. Virus, or whatever it is, you know. But anyway, when you're sort of improving, every time you laugh and happy, you get healthier. And we all know that. So actually coming is a wonderful thing to do. But the point is, so why worry about these things? If you're going to get it, you get it anyway. And I was actually telling the monks, if I do go, I'm actually not really going to Singapore, I was going to Thailand for this United Nations Wayside. If I do get swine flu, it'd be great. I can have a rest. I can be in a hospital and no one will be allowed to visit me. No one will be able to ask me these questions about their personal life or their husband or their kids or their financial problems. No one will be able to ring me up. I may be able to have a rest. It'd be like going on a retreat. And I really do need a retreat. I do work so hard. So it'd be wonderful if that happens to me. That's one of the days I remembered. If I ever get to... sent to prison for something, because sometimes you don't do anything. Sometimes people are put into prison for things they didn't do. Like that Andrew Mallard, he was accused of 13 or 14 years in jail for something he never did. And I thought it'd be great as a monk to go to prison. You know, have a nice bed to sleep on, because I sleep on the floor down in my monastery. And at least when you get food, actually you get it into separate compartments. All my food goes into the same bowl. And you actually get more choice, I think, in modern Australian prisons. And most of all, if I did ever get sent to prison, I'm very positive about this, I'm sure I'll make sure I misbehave so I can get sent into solitary confinement. And that was my goal. A monk in solitary confinement. Oh, that'd be the best retreat of all. So you can see just how you can deal with the problems of life. Attitude. There's one thing which I've found out, and I'm sure that you should know by now. Life is so hard to change. Other people, they're just so tough to change them, or teach them, or nudge them this way, or nudge them that way. It's just so tough to do. You can argue with a person that's just so stubborn. What do you expect? Everyone's like that. I'm like that. You ask the other monks, can you change my mind? Oh, not Ajahn Brahm. That's why, you know that we have two rules for our monastery. This is, we've got the monks' rules, which is for all monks, throughout the world, but every monastery has got its own set of rules, just applying to that monastery. And that first rule is, the abbot's always right. Rule number one. And rule number two, if the abbot's wrong, go back to rule number one. But people are stubborn, that's just their nature. So what do you expect? But what I've found is that this is our life. I've learned to understand what life actually is. Instead of fighting life, learn how to make peace with life. And accept people for who they are. There's a wonderful thing when you don't expect too much out of the people you meet and you know and you are with. You don't expect too much out of them. You don't measure them. And when you don't measure them, then you can love them. If you really expect something out of your partner, you're going to have a terrible relationship. When you try and measure them, you know, compare your husband to Brad Pitt, compare your wife to, I don't know, who's the siren of these days? And Angelina Jolie, I think Angelina Jolie's getting old now, isn't it? I better sort of do some more research on who's the siren of the modern age. Maybe on the aircraft this evening I'll go and have a look in the brochures for the movies and find out who's starring in them so I've got some more idea of who's going to be the modern siren or whatever. Anyway, whatever, you know what I mean. But if you try and measure your partner, then you're going to get so critical and you're going to be judging them and comparing them and expecting something out of them they will never be able to supply. People are not like that. They're not like in the movies. Life isn't like in the movies. And so when we drop our expectations, then we can actually love somebody. Because loving them is accepting them for who they are. Not fighting them. That's one of the nice things of being a monk. Because, you know, you can love everybody. Because you don't judge them. And some of the people who come to me, oh, sometimes they're so stupid. Sometimes they do the most amazing, crazy things. But a long time, you just stop judging people. And actually, you can like people then. So when you don't expect anything out of people, you make much more peace and actually can be much kinder. And this is just with people. Even with, you know, the monks I'm supposed to be training. You don't expect so much out of them. And then they do much better. There is an old saying which monks, abbots, use to each other when they meet. This is almost like a traditional greeting in the Thai forest tradition. When two abbots meet each other, they ask each other, how are your monks? Are they easy to train? And a few years ago, I went to see the monk who took over from Ajahn Chah, a monk called Ajahn Liam, very good monk. And I asked him one day when I was visiting Thailand, I said, how are your monks? Are they easy to train? And he said, oh, they're just no problem at all to train. And the way he said it was such nonchalance. I said, well, what's your trick? How do you train your monks when they're so easy to train? He said, very easy. If they want to go this way, let them go that way. If they want to go that way, let them go that way. They're so easy to train. So, wow, I'm going to try that. But he was a very powerful monk. What he was doing, he was saying, I'm not controlling them. You're encouraging them, but without controlling them. And this is actually how we live our life. Encouraging life, but not controlling things. He was that same monk. I was really, really impressed with him once. Now this was, you know, one of Ajahn Chah's, my master's, senior most disciples. And he was looking after Ajahn Chah and doing all the jobs, basically being acting abbot for many years. And when Ajahn Chah died, he was in charge of all the funeral services. And the King of Thailand attended this. This was a big show. So this monk built actually the funeral, the crematorium for him, which actually doubled as a stupa, a monument, which is still there now. And he put all this time and money into building this place where his great master would be cremated. And I was there at the time. You know, I went there, and Ajahn Chakra was there, my predecessor. And Ajahn Sumedho, all these monks, and the king was there. And when they lit sort of the pyre inside this box, the box exploded. Flames came out from everywhere. It was a disaster.
And there were monks with hoses trying to hose the thing down. And people were running around. It was just a complete mess. And what the monk responsible, this Ajahn Liam, what did he do? Instead of worrying about anything, he took one look and then went to bed. Had a sleep. I thought, wow, now that's a real monk. I wish I could do that when everything goes wrong. Just say, oh, never mind, just go and have a nice rest. Can you do that? No, you worry and worry and run around. What can I do? How can I fix this? And he said, oh, just never mind. He did his best. Doesn't matter if his master won't get cremated that day. Can always do it tomorrow. Now that's how you react when things go wrong. If you can't fix it, just go to bed. Have a cup of tea, whatever it happens. Now great people can do that. There was a poem which I remember, because I read this in a Buddhist book, you know, when I was very, very young. It's a great poem. I just remember it from maybe 40 years ago I first read this. It says, it's easy enough to be happy when life goes along like a song. But the one worthwhile is the one who can smile when everything goes all wrong. Can you do that when things go wrong? Now, one of the great monks, many of you know him, Kesavi Dhammananda, he's got a few books in the library. Sometimes it's very easy to write a book. But actually, can you live by what you write? And one of his great sort of events, which was part of his legacy. Now, he died a few years ago. When he was diagnosed as cancer, he burst out laughing. His doctor said, I've never seen this before in Malaysia. Someone who's diagnosed as cancer and they just laugh. Could you do that? Someone says, terminal cancer, month to live, 3 months to live, and burst out laughing. Why not? You might as well. Getting anxious is not going to sort of help you survive. Laughing, as soon as the doctor heard him laugh, he probably gave him a few extra months to live. Someone like that is not going to die very easily. But it's true that if my attitude can change the things in life, if he can't change, what do we expect? You're going to die anyway. So when we don't expect things which life can never give us, we don't expect what our wife can never supply, what our husband can never supply, what our kids can never supply. How much do you ask of your kids? And how many people come up and complain about their children? And when I listen and say, yeah, that's just exactly the same as the last parent said. That's what the last parent said. They're all like that. Don't think you've got a wrong one or you've done something bad and they're not sort of behaving. They're all like that. Even I read this, how hard it is to get your kids up in the morning to go to school. Well, I read this. This is science. You know, facts. Teenagers are genetically programmed to stay up late at night and get up late in the morning. It's in their genes. They can't do anything about it, poor things. It's not them. They're not the problem. It's the school. It should start much later during the day. Not a sort of, you know, what time does school start here? 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock? But anyway, so you start too early. You know, the poor teenagers, you know, just they're not wired up for starting that early. They're wired for staying up late at night. So poor old teenagers, you feel sorry for them. So what do you expect? But do you expect your kids to do well at school? Your expectations. I mentioned this to the monks last night. Just to show how our expectations and how we don't live in a real world. This was a little party trick, which I've done a few years ago here. I can do again now. You can do this if ever you're giving a talk, because it makes a few people laugh. But it also makes a very powerful point of how deluded we are. I'm going to ask you to really be honest right now. Be really straightforward. If you think you're above average intelligence, please put up your hand. Wow, how many dummies have we got in this Buddhist society? Kind of be honest. Okay, I don't need to sort of get you to put up your hand because about, I'd just say 80-90% of you think you're above average intelligence, don't you? Only 50% of you are above average intelligence. Only 50% of people can be above average intelligence. We always think that we're more intelligent than other people. That's a deceit which we live in our life. I know you, many of you have been here long enough. I've already told you. If Ajahn Brahm asks you to put up your hand, don't do it. Because you always get into trouble afterwards. But anyhow, you know those people. So in deceit, we expect even more of ourselves than we can give ourselves. So if your kid doesn't do well at school, just be kind to that kid, for goodness sake. And you've heard me say before, many of you here are Buddhists, I hope. Of course, you could be spies from the Christians or the undercover agents. But look, most of you I expect are Buddhists. And what's the most important teaching? Well, look, any person here who's a Buddhist, whose children come in the top 5% or the bottom 5% at school, you're bad Buddhists. That's not a good Buddhist family. Top 5%, bottom 5%, that's not good. Because in Buddhism, we believe in the middle way. And actually, it's much better as a kid being in the middle. There's a lot of stress, you know, if you're in the top echelons. And of course, a lot of problems if you're in the bottom. But it doesn't matter if you're in the bottom. Because this, I've mentioned this usually in the monastery and in the sort of the retreat. If your kid is the bottom of the class and getting really bad results, remember this story. This was one of my heroes. This was a kid in Thailand who went to grade one and failed grade one. Imagine that. I don't know how you can fail grade one. You know, whether you couldn't draw properly or you couldn't, I don't know what else. What did they do in grade one? You couldn't make sort of things out of sort of card or whatever. But anyway, you failed. So you had to repeat the year. And the teacher gave him extra attention. But even with extra attention, in the best world in the world, she couldn't pass him. So all his friends went ahead. And he had to repeat grade one for the third time. And after 3 years of grade one, it was a waste of time. So the teacher said, I'm sorry, we just can't actually educate you. You have to leave. Now imagine that, failing grade one. I see people sometimes have to repeat a year at university. But failing grade one, that really takes something special. So what do you do with someone who's so dumb they can't even pass grade one at school? In Thailand, they send him to the monastery to make him a monk. Not all monks started out like that. So I said, it was a monastery. And in the monasteries, well, the monks are very, very kind. And they got very patient. And so the abbot of this British monastery where they sent this guy was so patient and tried to teach him how to do a little bit of chanting and learn something about, the Four Noble Truths. What's the second one again? He kept on saying. He didn't even know the first one. And the chanting, what's the next syllable? Namo Tassa. It was hopeless. And after 3 years, this monk, who was so patient, just gave up on him. I can't deal with you. So he was really, really dumb, big time. And what do they do with somebody like that in Thailand? They send him to the forest monasteries. That's my lot. But this fellow, he was just such a simple mind that when they told him, just be in the present moment, be silent and watch the breath, he could do that with no problem at all, for as long as he wanted. He got this incredible deep meditation and became a famous meditation teacher. And when he had to do the chanting, this is just an aside, the only way he could actually chant, which sometimes monks have to do, because of his very powerful deep meditation, he could recall a past life when he did learn the chanting. And he'd actually access that past life when he had to do chanting to actually get the chanting through so he could actually chant with all the other monks. But in this life, he just couldn't learn it. It's an amazing story. So if you've got a child like that, send him to me. We could have this great monk or great nun for the future of Buddhism, a great teacher. So the point of the story is it doesn't matter if your child is not so doing well. Love them for who they are. They could be a great monk or nun in the making and you're making them feel bad about themselves. I remember there's this story in the book, Open the Door of Your Heart. as I was a school teacher, and sometimes as a school teacher, you know, those school teachers here, you know, you're in this sort of situation, you're supposed to do things, and sometimes, you know, there's something inside of you say, this is not right, why do I have to keep marking all these kids and making their life so difficult with encouraging them to pass exams? And there's always a dilemma in any sort of job, and the teacher is a dilemma of, you know, what you really think, you know, education should be and what the system says it is. But anyway, you had to play by the rules, and so we gave the exams, and at the end of the year, this gave out the report cards in my class. There's this poor kid. When I gave him the report card, he read it. 30th. Bottom of the class. In a class of 30. And I could see, I saw his face, because I knew, you know, who came bottom. People who came top, they say, yeah, we came top. This poor kid, you know, his jaw dropped, his shoulders hunched. He looked so sad. He was really suffering. Imagine you have to take that report card back to your parents. How'd you do, son? Bottom, Dad. That's suffering for us, you know, a young kid. He must have been about 12 or 13. And so, even then, I was a very compassionate teacher. I was kind. You can't just ignore a person who's suffering like that. So I went up to him and sort of stood by him and I said, you came bottom of the class. Yes, sir. How am I going to show this to my dad? He said, look, you actually deserve a medal for this. I taught him a little bit of Buddhism. In Buddhism, we've got something called a bodhisattva. Now, a bodhisattva is someone who sacrifices everything for other people. It's out of great compassion. And bodhisattvas sacrifice sometimes their whole life for the benefit of others. And I think that's what you are. You've taken this terrible position in the bottom of the class, so none of your friends will have to actually to take this position. You've done this so selflessly. All the other conceited, arrogant people, they just want to become top. But you've taken the humble position and taken that suffering on yourself, so no one else has to endure what's coming to you from your mum and dad this evening. He said, you're such a kind and wonderful person. In Buddhism, we'd actually praise you for doing things like that. And he looked at me as if I was crazy. But it stopped him getting sad and upset, and he laughed afterwards. It's not the end of the world coming bottom of the class. It was a big deal anyway. And I keep on saying it's great when you fail an exam, because then you don't have to take one next year. That's what happened to me. I kept passing the exams. They were endless. I never stopped. Because if you're passing the exam, there's always another one next week or next year. If you fail one, at least you get it out of the way. You failed, and so, great, you don't have to do exams anymore. Much more important things to do in life than exams, aren't there? But anyway, it was the attitude to becoming bottom, or the attitude of becoming top. The attitude to the things in life, that was the problem, not the world, but the way people look at it. And you cannot change the world, really. You can alter it a tiny bit, and it's good to try. But come on, are we going to try and make politicians not argue? Are we going to try to make, you know, people not be greedy and fraudulent? Are we going to try? Are we going to try so there's no criminals on the streets? We can try, and it's worth trying, but we're not going to achieve it, are we? But instead, we can learn how to cope, to make peace, and to not take such things so seriously. To expect life to just to be as life is, and to love her as she is, not as she should be. And the same way you treat your partner, you can treat life. Yeah, it'd be wonderful if we never got sick. It'd be wonderful if our cars never broke down. It'd be wonderful if our flights weren't delayed. It would be wonderful if there was no SARS, and no wars, no cancer, would it? Sometimes you ask that question. Would it be so wonderful if these things never existed? It's a radical question to ask. But sometimes it's something. I was talking to someone who's severe brain cancer, don't know how long she's going to live. It's a wonderful experience. Now you're the center of this beautiful, loving,
community, your family and friends are now actually coming and say how much you mean to them. If they'd only said that before. But sometimes we do need the cancer, we do need the tragedy to actually to inspire ourselves to express our love and our concern, our kindness and compassion, our softness. So maybe there is a reason for such things in this world. Sometimes it is the suffering, the so-called tragedies, the so-called difficulties, which actually inspire something inside of us. Something which we're too lazy to really generate, except in times of difficulty. Perhaps there is a reason for these so-called tragedies. And there is. And you see it. And it brings out the best in humanity. It brings beauty into our world. When life goes along perfectly, without any problem, I really doesn't encourage and incite the most beautiful part of human nature. And that's why whenever there is climate change, economic disaster, when the so-called things go wrong, there's also many things go right as well. It's never all tragedy. In the middle of tragedy, there's always a beautiful heart and beautiful edges, which if you are there and see it, it's strange, but it's there. I remember reading a long time ago, sort of a book about a person who was in Auschwitz. This was, I couldn't say this, I wasn't there. You can only imagine the horror and the terror of such a place. He said that we still told jokes, we laughed. Many days we had a wonderful time together. When I read that, I thought, how can that happen? When you're in a camp, seeing your friends and relations die every day, and you could be called out the next day, how do you do that? But it happened. It does happen. Human nature is amazing. It's how in the most difficult times we can rise above things. And when things do go wrong in life, when life does suck, human beings don't need to suck. Our attitude doesn't need to suck, as they say. We can't change the world, at least it's hard to, but we can all change our attitude and the way we look at life. It is possible to be like that person worthwhile who can smile when everything goes all wrong. It is possible to be less demanding of life, to be more realistic. And not to think that the politicians are making the mistakes. Why do they do such stupid things? And not to think that the bankers were just so greedy. What would you have done if you had the opportunity? Why do we keep thinking, my husband is just so insensitive? What, how, are you insensitive too? Oh, not me. No. When we actually see just what life truly is, we can change our attitude towards it. And the whole path of spirituality is gaining a wiser, more accepting, more loving attitude towards life and towards people and towards the differences which we have. Yeah, we got these little differences. And we do say stupid things. We do stupid acts. But that's no reason why to hate somebody or to get angry at life. That's why that I was actually taught, no one can make you angry, only yourself. No one can make you hate. You allow yourself to hate. You allow other people to upset you. You allow the dog to spoil your meditation. You allow your husband to spoil your marriage. You allow the telephone to spoil so the beautiful talk here today. It's just a telephone, what it does. But there's so many people in this room, there's always going to be one person who forgets. It just, you know, it's not a big thing. Anyway, it's just a telephone. What's the big problem about it? We're not going to shoot you. Not till afterwards, anyway. So when we don't get upset and angry about things, we don't allow other people to upset us. Again, one of those great insights. Why allow other people to control your happiness? Why allow other people to upset you? They can say whatever they want.
They can do whatever they want. I'm not going to get upset just because, you know, you're being stupid. So why do you allow other people to control you? Now let's extend that. Why do you allow life to control your happiness? So, you know, you get diagnosed as cancer, terminal. Laugh. Why not? You can do that. You're going to die anyway. You just get reincarnated. You just go around a bit quicker than you expected. That's all. Then you miss your plane. So big deal. There's always another one going. And oh, you get on there somewhere or other. If you do miss the plane, you can, you don't get too tired. You can stay here instead. There's always something positive in life. You've had many tragedies in your life so far. You've been divorced. You know, people have died. People you loved sort of have died. So many tragedies. You know, you've got married. That's another tragedy. But you got through that. Why are you laughing? You've been through all these tragedies. You survived. And you got through it. So at the time, when there's a tragedy and a big problem, sometimes we just obsess about it. We just overreact to things. Yeah, it's only swine flu. Big deal. It's only just terminal cancer. Big deal. It's only sort of divorce. Big deal. And it's only... Can't you do things like that? There's an old simile, and I love this simile because it's very easy to explain, especially in front of the camera. How big is my hand, simile? How big is my hand? You may say, was it 4 inches and 2 inches? Yeah, I've been actually working. It's really interesting being a monk. I just was on the roof and digging in the trenches last week. Really interesting being a monk because, you know, next week I'm going to Thailand, hanging out with the Crown Prince of Thailand or whatever. It's amazing that one day you're in the gutter, literally. And the next minute you're hobnobbing with royalty. It's a great life being a monk. I don't know where I belong. Actually, I prefer in the dirt. It's much more real. But anyway, I forgot what I was saying now. What was I saying? And my hand. Oh, that's right. Thank you very much for waving the hand back to me. So you make mistakes. And just if you make mistakes and say something stupid, you know that sort of great saying? If you make a mistake, say something stupid, and people start laughing, you laugh as well. And then the world never laughs at you. It only laughs with you. Simple saying, but it's a great. So you make a mistake. We all make mistakes. We all do stupid things. I've done my share of stupid things, and it's not going to end. I'm going to make more stupid things. And they're going to be on camera. You can actually get Ajahn Brahm's bloopers later on. But anyway, the hand, yeah. How big is my hand? And again, it's where you put your hand is what how big it is. Because when my hand is right here, it's so big I can't see any of you. I can't see anything of the world except my hand. Is it my hand's problem? No, it's where I put it. I'm just far too close to it. I should put it where it belongs, at the end of my arm. Now I can see my hand, but I can also see all of you, and I can see the lights as well, so the Buddha statue outside. It's perspective is the problem. Death. I'm dying. It's not the dying is the problem, you got it in the wrong position. Yeah, you're dying, we're all dying. Well, what else is happening? Put it where it belongs. It's not the biggest thing. Get perspective, for goodness sake. Swine flu. I can't see anything else but swine flu. Should I travel today? Oh my goodness, I shouldn't go to Thailand. I'm going to get swine flu. Put it where below, yeah, swine flu, but the chance of you getting it just is so small. So, you know, divorce, death, retrenchment, climate change, the whole thing is going to... So imagine how many tragedies are going to get you. If you actually survive swine flu, then you're going to get done by the economic crisis. If you survive the economic crisis, you'll probably get cancer, because cancers are on the rise. If you don't get cancers, then all these migrants in boats are going to invade and take over Australia. If that doesn't get you, something else will. Gee, it's a very dangerous world, isn't it? So the chances of you getting got are very small. So just look at life in proper perspective. It's an attitude problem, suffering. That's why you can get people who don't suffer, who get cancer, who get divorced, who get these pains and disappointments, who can actually laugh in the greatest of tragedies. How can they do that? How come that you just lost the person you love the most and you're at peace? How come that, you know, you've got this terrible disease and you're hurting very badly, but you don't complain? How come you've lost your job, but you're laughing? How can you do that? You've seen people do that. They do that because they understand the simile of the hand and the attitude. It's more to life than just the tragedies. And we can expect that to be part of life. We expect that people will die and leave us. It's part of life. We can expect economies to go up and go down. We can expect sort of wars to happen and then wars to stop. We can expect people to do stupid things and do some very smart things. We can expect yourself to do some really, really stupid things and some very, very kind things and sometimes some selfish things. You're a human being. So don't feel proud when you do something wonderful and don't feel guilty when you do something bad. It's just you being you. What do you expect? And then you can be at peace with yourself. You can be at peace with life. You can understand and accept things, and then life does get much better. Life will get so much better when people are not struggling so hard to change it. Actually changing the wrong things. We'll be changing people, not things. We should be being kind to people and get people more accepting of themselves. Instead of having economic development or material prosperity, just the development of the heart and the inner wealth of peace, inner happiness, and the ability to enjoy simple things. We can enjoy simple things a long time ago, so why do we have to worry about economic crisis? So you get retrenched. You have no job. Great, you can actually have a sleep in on a Monday morning. Why isn't it wonderful? You don't have to go to work. And you don't, when you've got no money, you don't have to bother going to the shops. You can't afford it anyway. You can save so much time. There's so many benefits, no matter what happens. And if you keep that positive attitude, you can change attitude. So if ever you're suffering, it's not life's fault. Don't blame your husband. Don't blame your wife. Don't blame your kids. Don't blame the government. Don't blame the economic crisis. Don't blame swine flu. And please don't blame your monk. Nothing to do with that. It's just your attitude is wrong. What do you expect? So lower your expectations. Get your expectations in life in line with life. And then it means we can love life. Loving life. Open the door of your heart to life. Unconditionally. A wonderful word. Unconditional love. Means loving life as it is. Loving your partner as they are, unconditionally. And loving yourself as you are. Stupid. Sometimes wise. Sometimes saying silly things. Sometimes being lazy. Sometimes being energetic. To love yourself as you are. Can you see how it all fits together? Making peace with yourself. You can make peace with your partner. You can make peace with the whole world. You can be free. But if you want something else, if you just want, like that great monk Ajahn Liam, if you want the cremation to go so perfectly, when it goes wrong, you really suffer. So when he actually made peace with that, he was like, I'll try my best. He could just go and have a nice rest. To sleep soundly when everything is going all wrong. Now that is a sign of a great being. So, when it says, or that taxi said, if anyone says life sucks, send them to, it must have meant, I never saw what was on the bottom, it must have said, send them to Dhammaloka Buddhist Center on a Friday night. Thank you for listening. 'Kay. Anyone got any questions or comments or complaints about tonight's talk? Yeah. Try, yes. Okay. Yeah, it is. I mean, kids do have another. Were you saying for the camera that in childcare that they kids had a fish for a dinner, and the fish fell on the floor, and everyone was rushing around. Oh, the fish is on the floor, and for them the trouble was having fish. Yeah, people think anyway. It doesn't matter. It's not a problem having fish. Okay, reason why human beings make more problems is because we get too much complicated. We lose the simplicity of life. Human beings think too much, and we're actually conditioned to be complainers. You know, to be fault finders. And we're always finding fault with things. And that's actually what we call the management training. What is a manager but finding faults and fixing them? And so we've gone on the way to looking for faults. And now we look for faults, you know, in our partner. That's why you can never find a perfect one. Because perfect ones don't exist. Believe you me. So you can't find a perfect partner. Then you want to find a perfect, you know, society or meditation to come to. And you come here and after a while, nah, I don't like this anymore. It's not perfect enough. You go sort of the church next door or something. Then you go to the mosque. Then you go to the synagogue or whatever. I don't know. You don't find it perfect enough. And then we don't find ourselves perfect enough. We're finding fault with ourselves. And that's the worst thing. Because that means you can never be at peace with yourself. There's always something to fix up. You know, we're managers of our own life. And that's, you know, how we've been trained. Instead of, yeah, it's okay, there's a time to be a manager, but there's also a time to be an appreciator. That's one of the stories. I remember when I was working very, very hard. I guess you should start this again. Working very, very hard, and in the weekends coming up here to teach, you know, 365 days a year. So actually, no, I do take 2 weeks off in the rains retreat. Working really hard. And I made a resolution for a while, because every time I went back to my monastery, the first years I was an abbot, I was looking at all the things which were wrong, which need to be done and fixed up. All the gutters which need to be cleaned, all the roads which need to be swept, all the additions which needed to be made in the buildings, and all the things which need to be fixed up. And I realized I was just being a fault finder. And other people would come to Bodhinyana Monastery sometimes and say, oh, this is a beautiful monastery, it's so wonderful. I'd say, well, can't you see all the leaves which are on the path which should be swept, and all the gutters which are full, and all the things which are falling down? And actually, I realized that they could see something which I couldn't see. Because I was living in the place, I was the abbot of the place. I wasn't seeing it in the same way a visitor saw it. And I couldn't see its beauty. I could just see the things which need to be fixed up, because I was always the abbot. So every Monday morning, for a couple of years, I decided, on Monday mornings, I'm not abbot, I'm visitor. So I walked around the monastery and tried to see it as you would see if you walk in there. See all the beauty and the wonderful things, instead of seeing all the things which need to be fixed up. So I wasn't fault-finding. I was appreciating. It's a great little exercise for a couple of years. Like, look at your partner, or your mother, your brother, your dog, or whatever you've got to live with in your life. Even in your house, instead of seeing all the things that need to be fixed up, appreciate you've got a wonderful house there. A nice little cozy place you can go back to. It's nice in there. You know, you've got a nice friend, a partner, whatever. Yeah, they're not the best, but you know, they're good enough. They'll do. And you look at yourself. And say, yeah, it's not the best, I'm stupid and do really crazy things and I've made a lot of bad karma in my life, but ah, it's good enough. There's this wonderful unconditional appreciation of yourself. Now, when I started teaching, I wanted to get everyone enlightened, and I gave that up a long time ago. They just love people for who they are. In other words, you've got unconditional acceptance. You don't fall for it. There's time to fault find when you're being an abbot, but most of the time you just be like a visitor. So don't be the boss of your life. Be a friend to your life. That's unconditional acceptance and love. Kids are good at that.